It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Israel's top two political camps are deadlocked after Tuesday's historic repeat election. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu perhaps looking at the prospect of the end of his illustrious political career. Facing a looming indictment on corruption charges, Netanyahu was desperately seeking to secure a parliamentary majority, which would allow him to pass legislation granting him immunity from prosecution. Instead, neither he nor his chief challenger, Benny Gantz, have secured that majority, forcing what could be a unity government between their two parties. That's what the kingmaker in this election, Avigdor Lieberman, is demanding. And he says he's not going to allow for there to be a third election or for any other scenario to play out. But that's where things get tricky for Netanyahu, because Gantz and others are refusing to sit with him as long as he's facing these legal issues and the potential indictment that could come down in a matter of weeks. The official results are only expected on Thursday. A lot of things can play out before then. That's when it's going to go to the Israeli President Reuven Rivlin, who he will be the one responsible for tapping the prime minister designate. But either way, this is not a victory for Netanyahu, who finds himself on the brink of being pushed out of office after 10 years as Israel's prime minister. Aaron Heller, The Associated Press, Jerusalem.
All right, Aaron Heller in Jerusalem, kind of trying to explain to us what's happening. And certainly we know that we're not the only country in the world who has a complicated political process where hostilities and division kind of reign. And we are, you know, Israel's very important to many of us, especially Christians. And so I've asked Lori Lowenthal-Marcus, who is in Israel right this very minute, to talk to us about what's happened. Let me just say that Lori is a contributor to the Jewish Press. She's a graduate of Harvard Law School, and her resume is so long. Lori, I just have to say, I want to read to you a bio I found online for you, and it sort of made me laugh. And it goes like this. Lori Lowenthal-Marcus is the head of the Washington-based The Israel Project, a Zionist propaganda organization. She is also co-founder of Z Street, an extreme Zionist group seeking to counteract, offset J Street, the dovish pro-Israel group. That in itself, let me know, Lori, that you are a friend. Welcome to the show this morning.
Thanks so much, Sandy.
Yeah, okay. All right, so do you live in Israel, or do you like go back and forth working? How does that work?
I go back and forth. I'm pretty much in Israel for 4 to 6 weeks at a time, and then return to the States for about 6 to 8 weeks at a time. So lots of back and forth.
All right, let me just say what we're hearing here. We heard that AP report. We're hearing this, like, almost seems to me, now this is my uninformed, sort of informed opinion, that they're trying to make sure that, you know, that Netanyahu didn't come out well in this election. It's almost in every report. It's what, 32 seats for him and Gantz, and that's not enough to build a coalition. But they repeatedly say that he's lost, he's not prevailed. That's kind of the stamp there. How do you view that?
Yeah.
How do you view the results so far?
It's such a limited explanation, because there are 120 seats in the Knesset. And so whoever gets to form the government has to be able to have 61 seats. So 32 and 32, Likud versus Blue and White, Benny Gantz's party, neither one of them can achieve 61 on their own. So there are 9 different viable political parties in Israel. And by viable, I mean there are actually about 30 political parties. 9 have crossed the threshold so that they can enter the Knesset. So the reason I'm giving you this long explanation is there's a tremendous amount of horse trading that is going to go on for some time. When the mainstream media is crowing that Netanyahu has lost, they just mean he hasn't achieved a clear victory, which nobody ever does. It has never happened that a party has gotten 61 seats all on its own. So it's, while they're not inaccurate, they're not completely false, they're not giving you or anybody the full picture. So there will be lots of trading. And amongst these nine parties, Sandy, there are several that will not sit in the government with each other. So they're not all up for grabs. They're not parties that are available either to both sides, and sometimes not even to any sides. So to do any math at this point is really, really premature. It would have been, I think everyone would have acknowledged it would be a victory for Netanyahu had he achieved something like 38 seats. Still not enough to form a coalition on his own, but there are enough, I'll use shorthand, right-wing parties and religious parties, Jewish religious parties, that would clearly join with him. At 32, he's looking at forming a coalition, as is Benny Gantz, forming a coalition with some non-traditional allies. So it's really all in play. Anybody who says Netanyahu lost is really not giving anything close to the full picture.
Yeah. So the truth is they both fell short for all the reasons that you said. Now, I did read that the coalition of whatever parties they are that are religious and ultra-nationalists are aligned with Likud and with Netanyahu, and that actually, tell me if this is correct, actually have 56 seats, which is five short of what they need. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate, but it's still missing. Yeah. You know,
okay.
That's what happened to Netanyahu in April. He couldn't, He was close, but no cigar.
All right, so then enter this is interesting to me, this Avigdor Lieberman. My understanding is, Lori, that he is, if I'm using the wrong terms, correct me, a secular Jew. He does not want to align with any party that has religious implications. I think he was a Netanyahu ally, and now, for some reason, he's the kingmaker. Now, can you explain that to us?
Yeah, I'm sure it is very confusing for non-inside baseball players. Avigdor Lieberman is an immigrant from Russia. There is a very large Russian immigrant population in Israel. When one says he's opposed to the religious parties, what he's opposed to are the what's called the ultra-religious parties. They're referred to here as Haredim in Israel. They're the ones you can sometimes recognize them. They will always be wearing white shirts, black pants. The men with long, what's called payas, the curls in front of the ears. Women, long skirts, long sleeves. Very observant religious Jews. Not all very religious observant Jews are part of the Haredim, but the Haredim have not traditionally served in the army, which is a huge source of conflict in Israel. Mm-hmm. They also demand, they have a large following and so have a lot of political power, they demand a lot of funding for their ultra-Orthodox schools, and many of the men do not work, are not in the workforce. They study Torah all day. That's what they believe is protecting Israel. So it sounds very strange to outsiders, but the reality is there are lots of Israelis, Jewish observant Israelis, who also are not very fond of the Haredim. I'm trying to put Avigdor Lieberman in context. He's not a Jewish religion hater. He's not what we know in America as ultra-liberal Jews.
Okay. No, I get that. I get that completely. But the ultra-Orthodox are aligned with Netanyahu. At least they support him, I mean.
Yeah, and to say they're aligned, it's because he has had those parties join with him in the coalitions in the past because he could not make the threshold otherwise. He couldn't reach 61 seats. And so to bring in these somewhat large political parties, you have to agree to offer them various things, such right. as, you know, not having public transportation on the Jewish Sabbath, that kind of thing. So they're not traditional allies. Netanyahu is not a religious Jewish man.
Yes, I know what you mean. I know what you're saying. I do. We do. Okay, you know, great. We do enough horse trading here that I think most people will get that. Or, you know, you got your feet in both worlds. Mm-hmm. So, we're going to run out of time, and I know that this is, requires actually more complex discussion. But my understanding is that Gantz is attempting to ally with the Arab parties, and Netanyahu made much of that during the campaign. Explain to us what that means.
As well he should, Sandy, to ally with the Arab parties. These are not Arabs who are friendly to Israel. They are Arab Israelis to run for political office as an Arab in Israel. This is my opinion. I believe it strongly to be true. You are opposed to the Jewish state. So for Gantz to say he's going to ally with the Arab parties is, not surprisingly, very frightening and upsetting to many Israelis, secular, peace-loving, and otherwise. So, yes, it is a big deal. The Arabs have not agreed yet, and to imagine what the Arabs would require to join into Gantz's coalition, it's frightening. For example, sitting in on security briefings.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. Oh. All right, so that was going to be my next question to you, and you answered part of it. What is at stake here? I recognize that people are tired of Bibi Netanyahu. He's been in power a long time. It's kind of the democratic heave, like we need a change. But what is at stake if he should lose to Gantz?
It's really an unknown because Gantz has said lots of different things. Gantz is a respected former chief of staff of the Israeli Defense Forces. He has never been a politician. He has said things like, we will pound the Gazans into sand, you know, we'll be stronger than Netanyahu was against our enemies. He's also said he's going to join in, have the Arabs come in and join the government. As far as economics, who knows what would happen? Netanyahu has been a godsend to the Jewish state in terms of reforming a former socialist economy into a true, strong, vibrant capitalist economy, which, for all its faults, is doing amazingly well and has weathered so many economic storms that much stronger countries have not. So there is a lot at stake. There was Bibi exhaustion syndrome. I think people believe he's never going to lose, so people did vote for some other parties that they wouldn't have in the past, and it's around to bite them.
Yeah,
perhaps.
I have to say, Lori, I've had the privilege of being in Israel several times. It's been a while, but it really
come
is.
Come and visit.
I'd love to come and visit. I will. I'll come and visit again. But it is really one of the most extraordinary stories on the planet, and that's one of the reasons, honestly, Lori, why I really do deeply believe in God, because I think Israel is just a sign of the Jewish people coming back to form another country after all of those years of exile is probably one of the most remarkable stories. And then to see it thrive the way it does, and to see Jewish people from that tiny little country be such leaders in the world, such intellectual powerhouses, it's pretty remarkable. So, I'm a fan. And we'll just see what happens as things unfold. We'll know Thursday. Is that right?
No, we'll know Thursday what the final numbers are, but we won't know what coalitions can be formed. We won't see the end of the horse trading for several weeks at least.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, listen, Lori, let's speak again about this, and maybe I will see you in Israel. Wouldn't that be fun? Lori Lorenthal-Marcus talking to us from Israel. Sandy Rios in the morning. Coming up next, Todd Starnes. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
More than likely, you've seen or heard about the recent abortion laws in various states that allow babies to be aborted up to term. Your heart breaks, but you're not sure how you can make a difference in a positive way. The Ministry of Preborn invites you to help be the change. Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country. Preborn centers throughout the nation are open to help women choose life. When a woman sees her baby on an ultrasound, she'll choose life over 80% of the time.
And I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry. And it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds, and you'll receive a story and a picture of babies whose lives were spared. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, on the 18th anniversary of the founding of the Presidential Prayer Team, we pray for President Donald Trump. 1 Timothy 2, verses 1 and 2 reminds us to pray for our leaders. I urge then, first of all, that petitions, prayers, intercession, and thanksgiving be made for all people, for kings and all those in authority, that we may live peaceful and quiet lives in all godliness and holiness. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for wisdom and guidance for President Trump as he leads our country. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. A big win for religious liberty and artistic expression. That story coming up.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The Arizona Supreme Court handed a pair of millennial business owners a big win the other day. Joanna Duca and Brianna Koski are the owners of Brush and Nib, a company that makes custom wedding invitations. They are also devout Christians. Alliance Defending Freedom sued the city of Phoenix over that non-discrimination law. The law would have forced artists to design and create custom wedding invitations that conflict with their religious beliefs, specifically same-sex marriages. Those who refuse to do business with such marriages would face up to 6 months in jail and $2,500 in fines. The Arizona Supreme Court says that law is unconstitutional. They said the city cannot violate the freedom of speech or freedom of religion of an artist. A good day for religious liberty in America. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
You know that guy, Todd Starnes, that you hear every morning at the same time on this show that you just heard a few minutes ago? You hear him make you laugh some mornings and make you mad other mornings. Well, that voice, that person, Todd, who's a journalist and an award-winning broadcaster and a best-selling author, has just written a new book, and he is with us this morning. Good morning, Todd.
Hi, Sandy. Good morning. Great to be with you.
Great to have you with me. Let me just say that Todd has a new book called Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation, and we are going to be talking about that in a second, but I want to ask you something first, Todd. You've been at Fox News Channel for more than 10 years now, and you're the host of Starnes Country, which if people don't know, that's a weekly television program now on Fox Nation. He's the host of Todd Starnes Radio Show, which is 3 hours every day. Boy, that's a lot, Todd. He also does his daily commentaries, which we are the beneficiary of, and writes for Fox News column, which is read by millions. So you wear a lot of hats, Todd. Which one is the most fun?
Oh, the most fun for me is actually writing my Fox News column. I'm a writer by nature, and for me, that's the most fun. But I have to tell you, radio is right up there as well. I just love being able to talk with our listeners, and you know this, radio is such a a personable, and it's really a one-on-one medium, and I just really love that.
Yeah, you know, I do. I agree with you, Todd. I would do radio in a heartbeat over television. I did television for years, and it's a wonderful avenue to get the message out, but the message is so short and sweet and truncated, and radio gives you a chance to really explain and teach. And so it's much more rewarding, no doubt about it. But your commentaries are fabulous. And I have to say, just to weigh in on this, I did commentaries a number of years ago, and it's harder to write a 60-second commentary than it is to write a whole column, don't you think?
Yes, it is.
Probably not for you.
You would not think that's the case, but it really is. Thank you for affirming that, Sandy.
Yeah, and to try to do that every single day, I mean, it's hard to say less. You can always say more. But anyway... all right, so your new book, Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation. People are very familiar with the kinds of, that listen to this show, are very familiar with the kinds of things that you report on, Todd. A lot of times in the mornings, you'll report on something that I haven't even heard of. And I'm just curious to know how much of your reporting these days, or whether it's the commentaries or whatever it is you're talking about, comes from reading the news all across the globe, or regular people just giving you a heads up about stuff you wouldn't normally know?
You know, Cindy, that's a great question. It really is about 50-50. We have a lot of listeners and readers out there across the country, and they see something on Facebook or Twitter, and they'll drop us a note, and we check all this information out. We verify that the information is accurate. And if it in fact is, we do a story about it. You know, a great example of that was the story about the cheerleaders in North Carolina who were punished because they took a photograph with a Donald Trump banner at a high school football game. That story came to us from a mom of one of the cheerleaders who happened to read my column.
Yeah, so it's actually wonderful, isn't it? I mean, it really is to be able to have that way of getting information that the news is not news media and reporters are not controlling what we hear. The people are actually able to speak up. Todd, on this particular book, this is your fifth. So how would you say this one, what is the niche that this one carves out?
Well, that, again, a terrific question. I want to apologize for my voice. I am dealing with a bad cold, so my apologies if I sound gravelly this morning.
Chicken soup.
You know, my writing style is very similar. People are familiar with Irma Bombeck and Lois Grizzard. I write in a folksy style with a lot of humor, but I do that in this book as well, but we address some really big topics and big issues. You know, Sandy, in my last book, I warned people that the biggest story coming out of 2016 was not necessarily Donald Trump winning the election. The bigger story, I theorized back then, was the rise of socialism within the Democrat Party. Mm-hmm. And I warned readers to pay very close attention to what was happening within the ranks of the Democrats. And now here we are, almost to the 2020 presidential election, and socialism has really taken root in the Democrat Party and has taken over the Democrat Party. And as a result of that, it puts so many of our freedoms in danger. And I take readers through that, and we explore the freedoms that are under attack. For example, we're talking about free speech. We're talking about the Second Amendment. We're talking about freedom of religion. But, Sandy, over the past couple of years, we've seen the left ban books like To Kill a Mockingbird, A Little House on the Prairie. We've seen the left go after statues and monuments and paintings like the mural of George Washington in San Francisco. These are not, you know, these kinds of things are not happening at the hands of conservatives. This is what the progressive left, this is what they're doing to America. And they're trying to really silence trying to squash our First Amendment rights.
Todd, don't you think also, I'm sure you talk about this also, it is kind of the pattern of socialists, communists, dictators around the world to cut people off from their past. You know, I always think about the Soviet Union where they erased Russian history and they put everybody in uniforms. I mean, Russia used to be, okay, I like fashion. Let me just say the old Russian kings and queens and the people of Russia prior to the revolution dressed beautifully. They made beautiful things. Russia had a very rich, a bloody heritage, but a very rich heritage. And that was stripped away. And they came to these uniforms and military songs. And the culture was, they tried to stamp it out, including, of course, the Orthodox faith. That's just one country. But that is the trend among socialist, communist dictators.
Absolutely. And again, you know, what is the thread? What, there's a common thread here, and we talk about this in the book. The common thread is socialism. You cannot have a socialist takeover if you have freedom of religion. If we're one nation under God, the socialist can't conquer that. They can conquer one nation under man, but one nation under God they cannot conquer. So they've got to get rid of religious liberty. What else do they have to get rid of? Well, they have to get rid of dissent. And what's happening in our country? If you oppose the leftists, they call you a xenophobe, a homophobe, a bigot, a racist, a white supremacist. So they're trying to silence any dissent. And then the other, and honestly, this may be the bigger issue here, they cannot take over an armed population. So that's why I believe we're seeing people, you know, running for president saying, in rather profane terms, that they are going to take our guns away from us. When you look at the broader picture, you understand why the socialists are, why the progressives are so determined to crack down on our rights. But Sandy, for the AFR audience, I've got to tell you, for a good chunk of the body of Christ, including many evangelical denominations, have disengaged from this culture fight, and many of them have been taken over by the social justice warriors, and that is a big problem in American in Christianity in America, and we got to address that as Christians.
Boy, amen to that, Todd. I totally am seeing that. I'm seeing it in very personal ways with people I know. It's so disturbing. It is so disturbing. And, yeah, so the church, I think, all right, I'm going to get out on this limb that I often get out on. I think part of this is being fueled by the distortion of the notion that God is sovereign. I believe God is sovereign, but it's a distortion to think that we cannot affect, we do not have choice, that God has designed every, he's laid out everything, and so therefore we just kind of yawn and go into, automatic pilot. I just reject that, but I think that's what's happening in a lot of churches, Todd. We still have to fight. The Bible is certainly filled with plenty of verses and stories about our responsibility in what happens in the world, about being salt and light and all the rest of it. And now you talk in your book about a civil war leading to another civil war. I've actually said the same thing, Todd. Why would you go to such an extreme conclusion?
Because we're talking about a direct assault on our Constitution, and that is something worth fighting for. But when you look at what the left has done, and this is what really just appalls me as a Christian, but also as a Southerner, someone who grew up in the South, where, you know, we understand race relations and the race issues. There are those on the left who are trying to divide our country along identity lines, whether it be racial or socioeconomic or whatnot. And that is just evil. I write in the book about this idea of white privilege. I have a story about that in the book, and I don't want to give it away, but I will say this, you know, in this idea of privilege, I am privileged to be an American, a freedom loving American. And I try to convey that idea in the book that we've got to get away from the hyphens, you know, the hyphenated Americans. And we have to embrace this concept that we are all Americans, regardless of our skin color. Sandy, we are living in some precarious times. And all the data backs this up. And Sandy, one of the other issues that we address is the public school system in America. This is the engine driving the change. And unless we get a handle on the public school system, we are going to lose this country. I have no doubt about it, because when you look at the polling data, all those young people coming up, the AOC generation, the millennials, Generation Zers, they support limitations on our First Amendment rights. They are favoring socialism over capitalism. And when you look at their values, patriotism and religion are dwindling. That's a big problem.
It's a huge problem. And, you know, I just have been talking quite a bit, Todd, on the show about Howard Zinn and his People's History of the United States, which, of course, he is a socialist Marxist, and his textbook has been welcomed into colleges and universities, and certainly his storyline, and it is just a story. It's a made-up story about America's history, and it's really our whole, the generation that we see now has been raised on Howard Zinn's made-up, really vitriolic narrative of the founding of this country, and that's what we're fighting. I just read another long report about how that's filtering down into high schools now and grade schools, and that's a huge problem. What can people do about that, Todd, about reversing their children's propagandizing on American history?
They have got to get involved in the school system. There are many of the public schools have textbooks committees where moms and dads can review the textbooks their kids are going to be reading. And I know that's a that sounds like a pretty lousy way to spend the afternoon. But, you know, these are things that we have to do if we want to reverse the leftist takeover of our public education system. You know, Franklin Graham told me, and we write about this in the book, Franklin Graham said, he believes it's time for every Christian parent to pull their kids out of public school, and if possible, and to put them in a private school or a homeschool. And he's not the only one saying that. I interview a lot of people in this book. You talk about socialism. Debbie D'Souza, the wife of Dinesh, she grew up in Venezuela. She understands what socialism is up close and personal. The activist mommy, Elizabeth Johnston, she is featured in the book. And, of course, Robert Jefferson, Mike Huckabee. So a lot of, I would say, high-profile people, Sandy, that are out there fighting this fight and really giving us some good advice on what we can do.
Yeah, let me just say the book is called How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation. Oh, no, that's not the title. That's the subtitle. Culture Jihad is actually the name. Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation. It's the latest offering by Todd Starnes, who, of course, lends us his great wisdom every single morning in his commentaries. Todd, what are you just on the very front end of introducing this book? It's been about a week, right?
Yeah, it came out last week, and we did a big media tour and book signing on Saturday all last week. Heading out to Atlanta later this evening. We'll be speaking at Liberty University, speaking to the students there next week, and I'm very excited about that during convocation. So we're hoping that, you know, we need help getting the word out. We've had a big problem on social media. We actually, my publisher tried to take out ads. They wanted to spend a lot of money with Facebook, and Facebook rejected the ads because they said my book violated their community standards. So we really are relying at this point on word of mouth and, you know, getting, you know, doing great radio programs like yours and a lot of the other folks there at AFR.
You know, it is, it's disgusting, and I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, Todd, I was just reading, we've been talking about the Israeli election, and Facebook had actually suspended Bibi Netanyahu for criticizing the Arab parties in Israel and talking about their jihadist connections. So they suspended his account, too. So you're in good company, but honestly, it's getting dangerous, don't you think? It's getting very dangerous.
You know what? It is, Sandy. And again, this idea of censorship is just it's appalling. And if you're gonna have a platform like Facebook, look, they can do whatever they want to do. That's their platform. But if you're out there saying you're a free, you're an arbiter of free speech, and then you turn around and you block conservative content, then you know, you're not being honest. You know, that's dishonest. So
yeah. All right, so this is a chance for us to help Todd and spread the word. The book is called Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation, killing our free speech, killing any way of contacting each other. That's what they're trying to do. And so we better speak up while we can. Todd Starnes, you are a national treasure, sir, and it's great to talk to you this morning. It's been a long time since I've talked to you, so it's been fun. So you take care
Thanks,
of yourself.
Sandy.
Lots of chicken soup.
Hey,
Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
When Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, "What is this that you're doing? Why do you sit alone?" My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. In the recent Barr versus East Bay Sanctuary Covenant case, where the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in favor of the Trump administration's new policy, which requires asylum applicants to apply in the first safe country they arrive in before coming to the U.S., the High Court issued a stern repudiation of local district court judges issuing nationwide injunctions. It's a huge step toward reining in an out-of-control federal judiciary. One I am glad to see.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. We as God's people need to be good stewards of all that He has given us. That is so important, and that's what drives me each day as I break down the latest financial numbers and talk to listeners across the country about their use of the money that God has entrusted to them. Join me each morning from 8 to 10 Central and Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock Central Time for Financial Issues right here on American Family Radio.
Hi, Frank Turek, co-author of I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. Please join me, Stephen Meyer, Gary Habermas, Hugh Ross, Chip Ingram, and many more at the 2019 SES National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 11th and 12th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Whether you're new to apologetics or a seasoned veteran, you will walk away better equipped to engage the culture. Online sales end October 8th. For tickets and details, visit conference.ses.edu. That's conference.ses.edu.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The baying hounds of political regressives and the talking snake media are calling for Justice Brett Kavanaugh to be impeached and removed from the Supreme Court. What does the Bible say? It says that, quote, every fact is confirmed by the testimony of two or three witnesses. We should not be talking about impeachment unless there are at least two to three witnesses who actually saw what happened and are willing to testify to what they saw. But there are no witnesses, not one, zip, nada, zilch. The supposed victim doesn't remember it. Her friends say nothing like that ever happened, and the guy who was making the charge refuses to be interviewed. Plus, he was a legal shill for both Bill and Hillary Clinton. In reality, this attack on Kavanaugh is about abortion. He represents a threat to Roe v. Wade and therefore must be stopped. Impeachment? No way, no how.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Next week, President Trump will address the United Nations General Assembly. His audience will include scores of countries that collectively persecute an estimated 327 million Christians. The trouble is that, at the moment, there is basically no cost to these nations for directly oppressing or simply tolerating the persecution of followers of Jesus. That must change. President Trump should make clear that those responsible for anti-Christian persecution will be held accountable, and that they can no longer engage in such behavior with impunity. Costs could take the form of reduced relations with the United States, loss of our foreign aid, denial of military sales, or other sanctions. This could be Donald Trump's Mr. Gorbachev tear down this wall moment. It may catalyze a significant reduction in the horrors facing believers. At a minimum, it will let them know we stand beside them. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Are you the hitman, the bagman, the lookout, or all of the above?
I think I'm the good-looking man, actually.
You didn't think that was illegal to obstruct justice?
Congressman, the president just asked me anything illegal.
Are you ashamed of the words that you wrote down?
President Swalwell, I'm very happy of what I've written, but you're welcome to read it if you'd like.
You should be here to be telling the truth.
The gentlelady is asking
because the truth will set you free and the American people. I yield back.
The time of the gentlelady has expired. The witness may answer the question.
I don't believe there was a question, Congressman.
Very well.
Yes, there was.
Could you repeat the question? I didn't hear it.
I'd be happy to repeat the
question. It's just a rant.
That was Corey Lewandowski. He was testifying before the House Judiciary Committee, Gerald Nadler's opening salvo. impeaching the president. And Corey, of course, was an advisor to the president, President Trump, during his campaign and then later. Corey agreed to come, and I think there were some restrictions on his testimony. He could only speak about what was in the Mueller report, and he testified for 5 hours. 5 hours. And that montage certainly gives you a taste of it. Some people say that Corey kind of ate the committee's lunch because he made fools of them, and he really demonstrated exactly what it is they're up to, which is pretty much no good. So I thought you might appreciate hearing a little bit more about what Corey had to say. These are his comments on just how petty this whole thing here is.
This country has spent over 3 years and $40 million taxpayer dollars on these investigations, and it's now clear that the investigation was populated by many Trump haters who had their own agenda to take down a duly elected president of the United States. As for actual collusion or conspiracy, there was none. What there has been, however, is harassment of this president from the day he won the election. We as a nation would be better served if elected officials like yourself concentrated your efforts to combat the true crises facing our country, as opposed to going down rabbit holes like this hearing. Instead of focusing on petty and personal politics, the committee focused on solving the challenges of this generation. Imagine how many people we could help or how many lives we could save.
He is really so right about that. It is absolutely stunning to see the stunts and the games that are played in Congress and in Washington, have been played for a long time, actually. But I have never experienced a time when it was so blatant and they had no shame. It's for all the world to see that, for instance, we have a crisis on our border. We have a crisis of millions of people, hundreds of thousands of people coming over the southern border, coming into the country illegally, taking jobs, draining us of our resources, and they'll do nothing. They do nothing. They want to, you know, harass Corey Lewandowski, who has no power. And the Mueller report has been turned in. It's over. It's done. But they are not, you know, they just want to do as much damage to President Trump as they can leading up to 2020. Plus, I'm sure you've heard it said that the congressmen, Democrats, in their various congressional districts are being challenged by people further to the left than they are. So they're trying to out-left the leftists. And some of them just really do believe it. They already are leftists. And so that's what Corey was up against, Corey Lewandowski, yesterday in Congress. Now, I want you to hear just a little bit more of what he had to say. So let's listen.
I think that this fake Russia collusion narrative is the greatest crime committed against the American people in our generation, if not ever. This is a president who was duly elected by the American people, and members of certain bodies refused to accept those election results. If this were done by a different president to a different party, the same way it was done to Donald Trump, that person would already be thrown out of office and people would be in jail. But when you support Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, there's a different set of rules. I think the American people find it very unfair, and there's been no accountability at the highest levels of the government for the Pfizer abuse applications which transpired, the spying on Americans clearly in violation of the Fourth Amendment, or the lives that were ruined because they simply wanted to support a candidate for president of the United States, and I think it's shameful.
Yes, and he's absolutely right about that. In fact, he's your friend by virtue of the fact that I invoke him a lot. He calls himself Sundance. And I don't know who he is, but a lot of national security experts look to him or at least respect his opinions. And he points out that it's been 585 days since Susan Rice, an email by Susan Rice, who was the national security advisor to President Obama, we found out about an email she wrote on the very day that January 5th, following a briefing by the intelligence community leadership on Russian hacking during the 2016 presidential election. Now, she wrote a memo that came to light 585 days ago, and that memo said this. I'll read it in part to you. President Obama, on January 5th, had a brief follow-up conversation with FBI Director Jim Comey and Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates in the Oval Office. Vice President Biden and I were also present. President Obama began the conversation by stressing his continued commitment to ensuring that every aspect of this issue is handled by the intelligence and law enforcement communities by the book. The president stressed that he is not asking about, initiating, or instructing anything from a law enforcement perspective. He reiterated that our law enforcement team needs to proceed as it normally would, by the book. From a national security perspective, however, President Obama said he wants to be sure that, as we engage with the incoming team, we are mindful to ascertain if there is any reason that we cannot share information fully as it relates to Russia. The president asked Comey to inform him if anything changes in the next few weeks that should affect how we share classified information with the incoming team. Comey said he would. So that's something that Susan Rice wrote at the last minute, right before that last administration went out. Many people are saying that was just an attempt to cover themselves if the impeachment, if the embarrassment, if the Russian collusion thing was not effective. If that failed, then this would go on record saying twice that President Obama made sure, wanted to make sure that everyone did everything by the book. But we know better than that. And I'm saying this. Sundance says that by the book aspect refers to President Obama and Susan Rice being told by CIA Director John Brennan, FBI Director James Comey, Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, and Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates that President Trump was the subject of an active counterintelligence investigation. Yet, Susan Rice denies ever knowing about Trump being under investigation. Mrs. Rice's lawyer has said that her client was completely unaware of the FBI investigation into President Trump at the time she made the draft on January 20th. And I think that was the morning of the inauguration, so I need to be more specific about that. He concludes by saying, and I believe he's right, everything about this Susan Rice email, including the explanations from her lawyer, Catherine Ruemmler, by the way, I'm sorry, Lindsey Graham, ask for complete records on this. Ask for that, and they have yet to come. And that's why Sundance is asking why it's been 585 days and no one has released the rest of the information about this. He says it's sketchy and suspicious. The sketchy extends to Senator Graham's lack of action to declassify the redacted paragraph. Nothing about this is passing the sniff test. Also, we learned just a few days ago that former FBI Director James Comey said in an interview, public interview, that we're in a weird state now because I won't commit to anything full time until next year's election because I need to be free to speak. So I'm in a little bit of a state of suspended animation. I can't go lead a nonprofit or take a prominent position somewhere else because I need to be able to speak. So according to Comey, by his own words, he's not going to be taking a job because he wants to be free to speak. And what do you think he's going to be speaking about? You know he's going to be trying to stop President Trump from being reelected. There's just no question about that. And pivoting, of course, to the kind of the other circus going on that's trying to achieve the same end, the attack against Kavanaugh, which we've talked about a great deal. Very interestingly, remember this started with the New York Times last Sunday printing an article suggesting there's another accusation against Brett Kavanaugh. And now we know that it's just completely uncorroborated. The person that allegedly was involved doesn't remember it. The person that says he remembers it did not see it. It's just, and there's more to the story, of course. Well, I'll let CBS tell you because that's the irony. CBS News actually weighed in on this and did probably one of the most damning reports on this, the follow-up. Jan Crawford of CBS, here it is.
The allegation of misconduct by Brett Kavanaugh at a college party set off a firestorm. Democratic presidential candidates called for impeachment. President Trump tweeted, Kavanaugh should start suing people for libel.
On the basis of this flimsy, uncorroborated story, they're calling for Justice Kavanaugh to be impeached.
The incident was detailed in the New York Times from a new book by two of the paper's reporters. According to a Yale classmate of Kavanaugh's, he exposed himself to a woman while at a college party in the 1980s. But late Sunday, the Times issued a clarification. The female student declined to be interviewed, and friends say she does not recall the incident. Today, Democratic Senator Chris Coons said he was aware of the allegation during the confirmation hearings and wrote the FBI asking it to investigate.
I think it was too narrow, too brief, and too constrained, and the American people deserve to know why.
I, Brett M. Kavanaugh, do solemnly.
Kavanaugh was narrowly confirmed after a gut-wrenching day of testimony from him and Christine Blasey Ford, who accused him of assaulting her at a high school party. Speaking publicly for the first time to the Times reporters, Ford's close friend Leland Kaiser, who Ford said was at the party, said she didn't believe Ford's account and that it just didn't make any sense. She also says she told the FBI that Ford's allies pressured her to say otherwise. Now, all four people that Ford identified as being at that high school party in the summer of 1982 have now said no such party occurred. And today, both the Republican chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Democratic chair of the House Judiciary Committee said they would not support impeaching Kavanaugh.
All right. So that was an amazing report on CBS News. And we have to give Jan Crawford credit for what she did. We'll see what happens to her. I think that they're not going to proceed with impeachment on Kavanaugh. Even Gerald Nadler has refused to do that. But still, they're doing damage to him. And we know what they're doing. As I described yesterday, it's a matter of sullying a person's reputation. Even if it's just by mention and people go, oh, I remember something about him. It was not good. And that's damaging. And, of course, they want to intimidate the court into folding and doing their bidding. And they want to intimidate people like John Roberts, who is a wuss. Yeah, I said it. He's a wuss. That's what they're up to. Interestingly enough, that article, that news story by Crawford, talks about Leland Kaiser. Now, Leland came up, her name came up during the Kavanaugh hearings, but I want to read a bit of what Quinn Hillier, he's an attorney out of Louisiana, says about Leland Kaiser. It's the titled Would-Be Witness in Kavanaugh Case Shows Rare Courage. Kaiser is the high school friend identified by Christine Blasey Ford, the accuser of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, as the other young high schooler at the small gathering in which Ford says Kavanaugh forcibly groped her. All along, though, Kaiser has said she remembers no such gathering, nor ever meeting Kavanaugh. In the book, I did not know this. I shouldn't have known this. I know Bob Beckel. I used to know Bob very well. I used to spar with him on Fox all the time. Leland Kaiser was his wife. I don't know if she's current wife or former wife. She's a former Georgetown women's golf coach. She is reportedly under a lot of physical duress. She's had a lot of very serious physical problems and is in a lot of pain. And she's come under tremendous pressure, as you can imagine, because she's actually doubling down and says, as Crawford said in her report, she doesn't even believe that now. Before, she said she didn't remember the party. And she didn't remember Brett Kavanaugh. But she's doubling down now and saying that she doesn't believe it ever happened. She doubts Ford's account on it at all. So you can imagine how popular she is among her friends. So, according to Quinn Hillier, Kaiser stood firm. Not only did she say she doesn't remember, Kaiser also now specifically says she has no reason to disbelieve her longtime friend. She has no reason to disbelieve her longtime friend. In doing so, she has faced pressure, criticism. Sorry. She has reason. I knew what I was saying made no sense. Kaiser also now specifically says she has reason to disbelieve her longtime friend. In doing so, she has faced pressure, criticism, ostracism, and threats against her reputation. There's actually a GoFundMe page that's been set up for Leland Kaiser because I wish I had a time to read it. I don't. But because of her physical suffering, she's not able to work. And now, of course, her friends are coming after her. Susan Collins, by the way, is under tremendous pressure in Maine because she was the final vote for Kavanaugh. And they're spending millions in that race, that left is, to try to get her defeated. So that's just another sideline of this. It does never stop, and it won't ever stop. In our lifetime, they will never stop trying to have their way with our culture, to come against, I believe it's a spiritual battle. It always has been. It's not going to end, but we know that God is sovereign. I'm not contradicting myself. I do believe he's sovereign. I know that God will make himself known, and all these things will be brought to justice in time. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.